It is September the 6th, and this is Kathy returning with the part two of the Decatur Herald in Review and possibly time for the Decatur Tribune. So I'm going to finish up some of the local news first. Family delivers flood relief. Couple packs up the kids in a truck to help the victims, by Tony Reed. Have heart, we'll travel. Such is the philosophy of Decatur mom, Austin Yutzi, who just got back from her own personal relief mission to flood-ravaged Houston. Yutzi, with husband Tyler helping out and their children, aged 3 and 1, along for the ride, set off for Houston at 5 a.m. Saturday. The professional property manager had filled a borrowed pickup truck with more than 150 cans of baby formula, some 8,000 diapers, and hundreds of feminine hygiene products and lots of other supplies targeted at young moms like herself. They dropped off 500 diapers and 20 cans of formula to a young Houston mother who friends had asked them specifically to help. She was left with nothing after her apartment took 12 feet of water, said Yutzi, and the rest was donated to the Houston Northwest Baptist Church, an aid distribution center. When Yutzi and her husband turned up at the church at 7 a.m. Sunday, worshippers were stunned to discover how far they had come to help. They were completely blown away, said Yutzi. Why do it? She said she could only imagine what it would be like to have floodwaters drown and wash your world away. And if a natural disaster like this happened in Decatur, I would hope that someone would take the initiative to come and help me, said Yutzi. Her personal relief mission had started with a Facebook appeal to get some supplies to load onto the truck of a friend who had been called to Houston area to work. But as the donations gushed in, the friend's truck was far from big enough. I said to my husband, who works crazy 12-hour shifts at Tate and Lyle, well, what do you think? And he said, it looks like we're going to Houston. An appeal for more help saw money donations arrive to offset gas costs. They did not stay in motels and napped in the truck, and they set off Saturday after her husband got off work. After getting the donations delivered, they had one side trip to Dallas because Yutzi is a major Cowboys fan, and arrived back in Decatur at 7 p.m. Monday. Tyler Yutzi had to be at work again at 5 a.m. Tuesday. His wife said she felt good about what they had done in Houston, and she felt good about her Decatur hometown too, which doesn't always get a flood of good publicity. Everyone has their opinions about Decatur, but in a time of need we come together like a real family, and we take care of other people, she said. This is what being a community means to me. Lost sailors honored by House. Davis leads lawmakers in a moment of silence for the McCain dead. Herald and Review staff. The U.S. Representative Rodney Davis led the U.S. House of Representatives in a moment of silence Tuesday to honor 10 sailors who died on board the USS John S. McCain last month, including Logan Palmer of Decatur. Davis, a Taylorville Republican who had been in contact with the Palmer family while the 23-year-old was missing, read the name of each sailor and called upon his fellow lawmakers to take a moment to honor them and pray for their families. The service and sacrifice of these brave men is not lost on this House and will always be remembered by the country they dedicated their lives to serve and protect, Davis said. The sailors were killed when their Arleigh Burke-class guided missile destroyer collided with the Liberian-flagged oil tanker Alnwick MC on August the 21st. The incident remains under investigation. The Navy announced last week that all 10 sailors were posthumously promoted. Palmer, a 2012 Sangamon Valley High School graduate and Harristown native, was advanced to Interior Communications Electrician Second Class. He had previously been Third Class. The 550-mile-long Strait of Malacca, where the accident occurred, runs between the Malay Peninsula and the Indonesian island of Sumatra. It connects the Pacific and the Indian Oceans and is one of the world's busiest shipping lanes. The collision ripped a gash in the McCain hull, flooding crew berths and machinery and communications rooms. The destroyer is now in port in Singapore. The commander of the 7th Fleet was fired after 4 accidents this year raised questions about its operations. Davis is scheduled to participate in a House Armed Services Committee hearing focused on Navy readiness, underlying problems with the USS Fitzgerald and the USS John McCain, at 1 p.m. Thursday, September 7th. Witnesses include Rear Admiral Upper Half Ronald A. Boxall, Director Service Warfare, U.S. Navy, Admiral Bill Moran, Vice Chief of Naval Operations, U.S. Navy, and Mr. John H. Pendleton, Director, Defense Force Structure and Readiness Issues, U.S. Government Accountability Office. Christensen attorneys seek to quit. The attorneys for Brent Christensen, the man being held in the Macon County Jail and accused of kidnapping University of Illinois visiting Chinese scholar Yingying Zhang, want to quit because they say their client can't afford them. In a motion filed with the U.S. District Court in Urbana, Bruno Law Office's attorneys Thomas Bruno, Anthony Bruno, and Evan Bruno tell Judge Colin Bruce they want out. Despite best efforts over the past 2 months, defendant and his family have been unable to secure sufficient additional funds to pay attorneys for representation on additional charges, the Bruno attorneys told the judge. The attorney said the case is likely to get more complex and rack up more billable hours because they anticipate prosecutors will file more charges, and such additional charges may implicate the prospect of capital punishment. The FBI has said that its agents working the case believe Zhang is dead. She was last seen alive June 9th in Urbana. The Bruno attorneys have also said they are willing to provide advice and consultation to any new attorneys that the court appoints. And now in the Your Money section, farm progress withdrawals are setting in. Only 725 more days in group therapy sessions. Only 725 more days until the Farm Progress Show returns to Decatur. Only 725 days of agricultural technological fasting. Only 725 days of not seeing friends that you only see when the Farm Progress Show opens at Progress City. The group therapy sessions would probably help, but I can't find when and where they meet. This was written by Stu Ellis. If there was one, I would confess my addiction to brightly painted iron, the ultimate in electronic gadgetry that does more things than even I can understand, seeing the people. People who say hello to someone they've never seen before and may never see again. It's not like a downtown street. It's like rural Route 4, where you raise a forefinger off the steering wheel to every other vehicle you meet. The exhibitors are gone, along with most of their equipment. Many of the tents are down, and most of the farm equipment has been trucked off to Grand Island, Nebraska, where Husker Harvest Days begin Tuesday. Those lucky Great Plains folks get to enjoy what we have to wait another 725 days to see. They will crowd around combines and tillage equipment as it passes through the field, just like we did last week. They will get to kick tires, ask prices, and emotionally drool over that new paint. For now, memories will have to suffice of some of the technological masterstrokes that farm equipment makers are generating. Did you see the new way that GSI has to keep farmers out of a grain bin using a slowly inflating balloon that rises from the floor and pushes the grain toward the stumps in the middle? Amazing! No more bin sweeps, no more mangled feet. It has the capacity to put OSHA grain bin inspectors into retirement and close the government files on bin sweep injuries to farmers and grain elevator employees. Did you see the AmVax inkjet printer? Well, it doesn't really dispense ink. Instead, it dispenses herbicide, fungicide, insecticide, and biological soil amendments as the planter moves through the field. It rations it out only by prescription where your drone or other form of agricultural intelligence says there is a crop issue or a potential one. In other words, the entire field is not treated, only the areas which need it. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a cut finger instead of covering your whole body with several boxes of Band-Aids. It's the same concept that Beck's Hybrids has been researching by putting different seed corn hybrids in a field to optimize changing soil conditions as the planter moves through the field. The planter in front of the Beck's building at Progress City was fascinating. It can plant multiple populations in a given field in multiple row widths and even multiple grains, but not many farmers would plant succotash unless Del Monte offered a pretty good contract for food-grade corn and beans. There would be a lot of challenges to producing a quality succotash crop. Those innovations are in the future, near future hopefully, but there are many new innovations that are being installed in current production line farm equipment that will make farmers more productive and more efficient, and that is the main challenge. With high costs and low commodity prices, farmers have to increase yields without increasing their input costs, meaning more bushels to sell. The Farm Progress Show exhibitors did their best trying to offer innovations that help reduce cost with a corresponding increase in yield. That is the future in farming. If you did not attend this year's Farm Progress Show, set aside August 27th through 29th of 2019. Mark it down today. There are only 725 more days, and then make a point of getting there. If you need a reminder, watch this space and you will get some strong reminders about it. Attendance will be taken. If a group therapy session can be found, you'll be alerted and you won't have to suffer the severe depression that has consumed me. But wait, the Forum Progress show will be in Iowa in only 359 more days. Stu Ellis is an observer of the Central Illinois agriculture scene. In addition to his weekly column, you can view his From the Farm and Harvest Heritage reports on WCIA3 News. And now the obituaries for the Decatur area. This first one is from Forsyth. Colonel Thomas Arthur Hillquist, retired, 83, of Forsyth, formerly of Park Ridge, Illinois, passed away Saturday, August 26, 2017, at the Hickory Point Christian Village. The massive Christian burial to celebrate his life will be at 11 a.m. Friday, September 8th, at Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church, Reverend Richard Welton, celebrant. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the Mass in the church. Burial with military rites will be at 3 p.m. Friday, September 8th, at the St. Maurice Cemetery in Morrisonville. From Blue Mound, James H. Reynolds, 78, of Blue Mound, Illinois, passed away on Monday, September 4th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Private family services will be held at a later date. The family would like to give a special thanks to Jim's close friends, Lenny Ford, Steve Kaufman, Jenny Prason, Kevin Bafford, Bernile Burns, Brent Locke, Roger Cox, and Jeff Folks. From Maroa, Greenleaf, John L. Sr., 85, of Brandon, passed away on September 3, 2017. There will be a visitation on Thursday, September 7th, from 11 to 12 p.m. at Serenity Meadows Funeral Home, followed by a committal service at 1:30 p.m., Florida National Cemetery. From Assumption, John R. Lawrence, 68, of Assumption, died on September 3rd at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Funeral service with Masonic services and military rites will be at 3 p.m. Sunday, September 10th, in the site's funeral home in Assumption. Visitation will be from 12 to 3 prior to the service time. Burial will be in Pleasant View Cemetery, Assumption, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Masonic Lodge Scholarship Fund or Reach Out Recovery. From Findlay, Marilyn Ellen Scott Duckett, 94, of Findlay, Illinois, passed away peacefully without pain and surrounded by family at her home at 5:15 p.m. Sunday, September 3rd. Funeral services will be held at 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, at the Findlay Christian Church in Findlay, with the Reverend Richard Hargrave officiating. Visitation will be from 4 p.m. until 6 p.m. Memorials may be given to the First Christian Church. From Decatur, Mary Estelle Hayes Lampkin, also known as Emmy, of Decatur, died on September 2nd. Born on July 23, 1923, at St. Mary's Hospital, she was a lifelong resident of Decatur. Visitation will be at Moran and Goble Funeral Home, located at 2801 North Monroe Street, on Friday, September 8th, from 6 to 8 p.m. The funeral service will be on Saturday, September 9th, at 10 a.m. at St. Patrick Catholic Church. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to St. Patrick's Catholic Church, St. Teresa High School, or a charity of the donor's choice. From Decatur, Donald W. Maines, 78, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, September 2nd, at Imboden Creek Living Center. Visitation to celebrate the life of Donald Maines will be from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, September 8th, at the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Graveside services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 9th, at the Graceland Cemetery, where full military honors will be conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials may be directed to the American Cancer Society or the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter. From Monticello, Dorothy Evelyn Dowdle, 97, of Monticello, passed away September 3rd at the Piatt County Nursing Home in Monticello, Illinois. Private family graveside service will be at Croninger Cemetery in Cisco. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home, Kirby Medical Center, or the Piatt County Historical and Genealogical Society. From Decatur, Whitney Nicole Summerlot, 24, of Decatur, died Friday, September 1st at the Carl Hospital in Urbana, Illinois. A family-led memorial service will be at 4 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in Parkway Church of the Nazarene, 2701 East Ferris Parkway, in Decatur. There will be no visitation. Memorials will be appreciated to God's shelter of love. Tanzia's funeral home, Tanzia's Logan Funeral Home, is assisting the family with arrangements. From Clinton, Wesley W. Spencer, 85, of Clinton, passed away at 3:25 a.m. September 3rd at Decatur Memorial Hospital in Decatur. Masonic services will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, September 9th, with funeral services to follow at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton, with Ernie Harvey, Jr. officiating. Burial will follow at Pleasant Valley Cemetery, Kenney, Illinois, with military honors. Visitation will be 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday at the funeral home. Memorials may be directed to the Wesley W. Spencer Memorial Fund for college softball scholarships. From Decatur, Mary Lou Gardner, age 72, of Decatur, passed away peacefully with her family at her side on September 4th. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Thursday, September 7th, at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church in Decatur. The funeral mass at 10 a.m. Friday, with Father Nick Hussein officiating. Interment will be at 2 p.m. Friday at the Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield. In lieu of flowers, memorials are requested to an education fund set up for Aaron and Parker Templeton at Staley Credit Union on Woodford Street in Decatur. Tanzia's Logan Funeral Home and Care is in charge of the arrangements. And now a kind of fun article from the food section. This sweet taste test pits 5 brands and 2 flavors against each other. Who will win? With its ability to spread knowledge as well as hatred, is the internet a positive force for mankind or a negative one? If God is good, why does he allow evil to exist? What is the essence of humanity? What makes us different from other animals? Good questions, all, and hard to answer. But not as hard or as inherently fascinating as this. Who makes the best chocolate chip and the salted caramel ice creams in the country? This great epistemological question was eventually distilled into, what premium brands of ice cream available at grocery stores make the best chocolate chip and salted caramel ice creams? Finding volunteers to help with this quest was, as you might guess, not particularly difficult. We ended up with 10 taste testers, including me, who agreed to sample both the chocolate chip and the salted caramel flavors of 5 different brands: Häagen-Dazs, Talenti, Grater's, Oberweis, and as a control, the non-premium Edie's Dryers. The tastings were not blind. We knew which ones we were trying, except for the first taster, the one with the expertise and the palate. Ranked from best to worst, here are our judgments. Chocolate chip, first place. Häagen-Dazs Vanilla Chocolate Chip. Tester comments, rich and the best, with big, nice chips. One tester praised its hard chocolate chips, while others complained that the chips were low quality and said the chips ruin it. Second place in the chocolate chip, Grater's Chocolate Chip. The testers said it had a hearty taste with a creamy mouthfeel, but the ice cream's chewy chocolate chips were called an interesting surprise by one tester and weird by others. Third placed, Talenti Chocolate Chip. One tester called it most classic, while another complained it was not a deep vanilla and thought the chocolate chips were melting. Two testers complained it was icy. Fourth place, Oberweis Chocolate Chip. So creamy enthused one tester, while another called it the best. One enjoyed the texture, but thought the taste was a little off, while another complained of an aftertaste. And in fifth place, Edie Dryer's Chocolate Chip. Creamier than I expected, with a fine and velvety texture and big chunks of chips, but it had an odd, slightly sour vanilla taste. It was too icy and sort of bland. Then in the salted caramel category, first place, Talenti Sea Salt Caramel. More of a deeper caramel flavor and like real caramel, said the testers, who also called it very tasty and rich and creamy. A couple of testers noted the dark color. Second place, Häagen-Dazs Dulce de Leche. Great mouthfeel, enthused one tester, and great texture, agreed another. Other testers noted a very mild flavor and thought it was more like vanilla, but the consensus was yum. Third place tie was between Oberweis Dulce de Leche and third place Edie Dryer's Caramel Delight. For Oberweis, nice texture and sweetness with a great caramel flavor. Other testers found not enough caramel taste and thought it was dull compared to the others. For Edie's, creamy, foamy, and very sweet, but the caramel is subtle or too bitter. In fifth place, Grater's Original Salted Caramel Ice Cream. One tester called it the best, and another said it had the strongest caramel taste. Others thought it was too caramelly, tasted burned, or complained of a bitter aftertaste. So the best one in chocolate chip is Häagen-Dazs, and the best in salted caramel was Talente. It's up to you now. And now turning to the Decatur Tribune, Paul Osborne, City Beat. State government holds back job development in Decatur and other cities. We have a lot of people working hard to bring more jobs and opportunities to Decatur, and I applaud and support their efforts. The one big obstacle that Decatur faces is that we are located in Illinois, which is about as business-unfriendly a state as you can find, and has been for a long time. The story at the left on this page is about what Greg Bies, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, was saying about our state in a speech a year ago, and how his prediction looks today. All you have to do is look at the graphic in the center of the page to see how well Illinois is doing in adding manufacturing jobs compared to all of our neighboring states. So it shows Illinois with 600 jobs, Indiana with 6,000, Michigan with 5,600, Wisconsin 9,900, Missouri 5,800, and poor old Illinois sitting there with 600. The numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics represents manufacturing job growth in Illinois and our neighboring states from August 2016 to July 2017. Indiana had 10 times as much job growth in the last year as did Illinois, and Wisconsin had nearly 17 times as much job growth. Illinois was at the bottom in adding manufacturing jobs. The reason is obvious, and it has to do with business-unfriendly decisions made by those who represent us in Springfield, and they are killing businesses who are here and slamming the door on many businesses that might locate here. Obviously, lots of jobs are being created in all of our neighboring states. Illinois' economic climate is not a new problem for Decatur. This is not a new problem. A decade ago, when I was mayor, Craig Coyle, who was then president and CEO of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County, told me more than once that when he attended national trade shows to pitch the reasons businesses should locate in Decatur, the fact that our city was in Illinois many times took us out of any consideration. That was 10 years ago, and the state's business climate has only grown worse, with more jobs lost during that time. A top executive with Caterpillar spoke at a Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce meeting and said that if Caterpillar was not already in Illinois, they would not consider coming here. That was 10 years ago. The evidence is all around us that other states next to us are creating jobs while we blindly keep a strong hand on policies that kill business growth in our state. What a shame for a lot of our people who could use those jobs. It's no secret that I love this community. But in addition to being a newspaper editor, I'm also a business owner, and increasing regulations and taxation continue to squeeze out desire to create more jobs and expand horizons. That's not what I want for Decatur or for Illinois, but right now that's what we have to deal with. We just have to be more creative. Despite many problems created by our state government, I think Decatur has experienced the kind of year that gives us hope for the future of our city. That's because we have a solid base of people who believe in the future of our community and are willing to give their time, talent, and money to overcome major difficulties beyond our control. Not running. As indicated in the letters to the editor section, City Councilperson Lisa Gregory will not be running for State Representative Bill Mitchell's seat in the 101st District. Mitchell said that he is retiring at the end of his term, and there's been a lot of speculation who might be running to replace him in the General Assembly. Gregory's name has been mentioned, along with several others, and one, Sarah Gordo School Board President Todd Henricks, has already announced that he is running. Rumor. A few people mentioned to me at the Labor Day parade that City Councilman Patrick McDaniel was considering running for Mitchell's seat in the 101st District. I asked McDaniel about it, and he told me he doesn't live in the 101st District, so the answer would be a definite no. Often the big problem with the rumor mill is that few people ever stop to consider some basic reasons why the rumor could not be true. Circulate. Macon County Clerk Steve Bean says that candidates for the March 20th general primary election can now be circulating petitions for office. Countywide candidates for county clerk, sheriff, and treasurer, plus county board candidates and precinct committeemen, can pick up their petitions at the county clerk's office or online at www.co.macon.il.us. The petitions can be found on the news scroll bar on the main page. I can't remember a summer where we have enjoyed better weather for the outdoor events in our community, especially the major ones. Weather was about as perfect as it could be for the Decatur celebration, and it was also great for the Farm Progress Show in Decatur last week. Friday night high school football had great weather when it kicked off its first games of the season, and there was great weather for the Labor Day parade on Monday. Obviously, rain dampened a few of the many events held during the summer, but overall, it's been great. I hope with this optimistic view to end this column, I haven't jinxed Arts in Central Park that's going to be held next week. If it snows, blame me. And the article that he referred to is called Job Growth Continues to Trail in the Midwest. 1 year ago, Greg Bays, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, addressed the City Club of Chicago and made a passionate call to Illinois lawmakers. In that address, he warned that Illinois government is closing business one day at a time. Bays spoke to the hemorrhaging of manufacturing jobs in Illinois, more than 300,000 jobs lost since 2000. Now Bays contends that Illinois has passed a budget which includes tax hikes on job creators, and yet it is not balanced. Illinois has passed so-called education reforms that do not include property tax reform, comprehensive mandate relief, or any effort to address the ever-increasing pension debt that our state faces. But when it comes to pro-growth plans to secure the economic of our state's middle class, state government has failed. Bays's message 1 year ago was clear. The revitalization of the middle class and manufacturing job economy directly correlates to public policy that encourages pro-growth policies, a stable economy, and creating a more friendly business climate. Yet Bays said lawmakers failed to heed this warning or enact reforms. Despite repeated calls for compromise, Illinois lawmakers passed a massive $5 billion tax hike that failed to include any meaningful reforms that could revitalize the economy and send a strong signal that Illinois is a good place to do business. Every major business group labeled the 2017 legislative session as one of the worst for employers. Illinois continues to lag behind. It comes as no surprise that the failure of the legislation to act has resulted in Illinois continuing to lag behind neighboring states. From August of 2016 to July 2017, Illinois has only added 600 manufacturing jobs, while neighboring states have added 9,900 in Wisconsin, 4,600 in Michigan, 6,000 in Indiana, 5,800 in Missouri, and 1,800 in Iowa. Illinois lawmakers failed job creators' gain while continuing to protect wealthy trial lawyers and labor union bosses, said Bays. Since last year, the General Assembly imposed a massive $5 billion tax hike while threatening a whopping 82% spike in the minimum wage and a new paid leave mandate on every Illinois business. We trail nearly every state in key indicators such as unemployment rate, GDP growth, and manufacturing job loss, not to mention leading the country in the out-migration of residents who are fleeing our state. At what point will legislators wake up to the reality that is looking them in the mirror? Lawmakers need to stop passing job-crushing taxes and regulations to stop the bleeding and start restoring stability and predictability. Economic reforms must be a number one priority during veto session, or we will continue to see manufacturing job numbers that pale in comparison to our neighbors, and a middle-class population that continues to struggle without well-paying manufacturing jobs. Bays indicated the IMA will continue to champion the immediate and long-term solutions put forward in the middle-class manufacturing agenda, which includes meaningful and permanent workers, compensation reform, tax code reform, fiscal reform, property tax reform, and a strengthened education and workforce system. The IMA urges lawmakers to prioritize a manufacturing rebirth in Illinois in order to revitalize the middle class and help jumpstart the Illinois economy. And with that article from the Decatur Tribune, I'm going to call it a day. This is Kathy, who has enjoyed very much bringing you the news from the Decatur area. It is September the 6th, and I hope you have a great day.